Good morning, and welcome to the United Financial Bancorp second quarter 2014 earnings call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Marlise Shaw. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Betty. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our second quarter conference call. Before we begin, we would like to remind you to read our Safe Harbor advisement on forward-looking statements on our earnings announcement. Forward-looking statements, by their nature, are subject to risks and uncertainties. Certain factors could cause actual results to differ materially from expected results. Our comments today are intended to qualify for the safe harbor afforded by that advisement. And now I would like to introduce Bill Crawford, our Chief Executive Officer.
Thanks, Marlise. Good morning, and thank you for joining us on today's call and for your continued interest in our company. Yesterday, we released second quarter 2014 results. These results reflect the completion of the merger between United Financial Bancorp and Rockville Financial on April 30th. While the results only include 2 months of the combined entity's earnings, I'm pleased at the strength of the company's performance over that short time, as well as the progress the company's making towards its post-close performance goals. Our CFO, Eric Newell, will provide more detail on the financial metrics impacted by the merger in his commentary. In addition to Eric with me this morning, I have Marino Santarelli, our Chief Operating Officer, Scott Bechtel, our Chief Risk Officer, Mark Kusha, our Chief Credit Officer, Dave Paulson, Head of Wholesale Banking, and Brandon Lurie, Head of Consumer Lending. During the second quarter, the company reported strong organic loan growth of 8% on an annualized basis, and commercial loans grew organically by 9% annualized. This strong growth is reflective of the investments the company has made in the infrastructure of mortgage banking and our commercial lending divisions. The company will continue to make investments in these areas and opportunistically acquire commercial banking teams and high-performing commission-based mortgage loan officers. We're pleased that we're able to further execute this strategy during the past quarter with the acquisition of an experienced mortgage banking team in the West Springfield market. We are diligently preparing for the fourth quarter data integration and have every reason to believe it will be completed as scheduled and the subsequent targeted cost savings will be achieved. The team is highly focused on evaluating cost savings opportunities throughout the company as we develop our operating budget for the go-forward organization and will result in United's transformation into a highly efficient growth company. The company is intensely focused on achieving the 2015 performance metrics goals communicated to our investors. I'd like to thank my United Bank teammates for their dedication and hard work. United, we are stronger, and I'm very bullish for our prospects in the years ahead. Now I'd like to turn the call over to Eric Newell, our CFO, to provide some further detail on the quarter's results.
Thank you, Bill, and good morning. Yesterday, we reported a net loss of $5.6 million, or a loss of 13 cents per share. Included in our GAAP results are pre-tax merger-related expenses totaling $20.9 million. The effects of our purchase accounting adjustments made in the quarter, including a pre-tax benefit of $4.9 million to net interest income, amortization of our core deposit intangible of $321,000, and finally, a pre-tax net gain from sales of securities totaling $589,000. Excluding each of these items on a tax-affected basis, our operating net income totaled $5.8 million, or 13 cents per share, a 63% improvement over the 8 cents per share the company reported for operating earnings in the linked quarter. I want to once again remind listeners that our results in the quarter reflect only 2 months of consolidated results. As a consequence of the merger, purchase accounting will become more prevalent in our GAAP results. We have added additional disclosures in the earnings release to assist users of our financial statements to obtain a more transparent view of the operations of the company separate from purchase accounting impacts. The most significant impact of the GAAP results is the accretion and amortization of loan marks, which include both credit and interest marks. We have expanded our disclosure to report both originated loans and purchase loans. Within the purchase loan disclosures, the company will report covered loans, which are subject to ASC 310-30, formerly known as SOP 033, which are deemed to be impaired by management when purchased, as well as purchased loans, which subsequently experienced deterioration requiring management to provide additional reserves against the loans. Finally, we will report non-covered purchase loans, which have no associated allowance for loan losses and only carry a nominal credit mark and interest mark that the company will amortize or accrete over the life of the loan. The GAAP earning asset yield for the quarter ending June 30th was 4.28%, which included the benefit of $3.4 million of accretion. Excluding this accretion, the operating earning asset yield for the quarter was 3.92%. The cost of interest-bearing liabilities on a GAAP basis was 50 basis points and included accretion of $1.6 million. Without the effect of purchase accounting, our operating cost of interest-bearing liabilities was 70 basis points. Operating net interest margin, excluding the impact of purchase accounting adjustments, increased to 3.36% in the second quarter of 2014 from 3.17% in the linked quarter. This was driven by growth in the higher-yielding C&I and residential loan portfolios. For additional disclosure on operating yields by loan type and costs of interest-bearing liabilities as compared to GAAP results, the company has included a reconciliation of these items in the earnings release tables. The company reported provision expense of $2.1 million in the second quarter. A significant portion of the increase in provision compared to the linked quarter relates to reserves applied to two loans. One of the loans was originated by Legacy Rockville and has been under review for the last several quarters. The company has applied a reserve on the expected difference between the ultimate workout result and the unpaid balance. The other loan, which was purchased, has experienced significant deterioration since legal close. Therefore, management deemed it prudent to provide a reserve on this purchased loan and reclassify it as non-performing. We continue to evaluate the facts and circumstances on this loan and will consider whether we could support reclassifying the loan as impaired on April 30th. Nevertheless, asset quality remains exceptional by all industry and peer metrics. I would like to provide some commentary regarding mortgage banking as well. The net gain from sales of loans increased to $1.3 million, or 28% year-over-year, and nearly twice the level reported in the linked quarter. The main influence in the increase from the linked period is the impact on the unrealized gain on sale related to loans that are held for sale, which is driven by activities taken by our secondary mortgage desk, whereby the desk may opt to hedge a certain portion of loans in the pipeline with mandatory and best efforts forward commitments. Also impacting the increase was the change in the value of rate lock commitments the company executes with its customers during the application process. The delta between the linked quarters was predominantly driven by increases in volumes versus improvement of market rates, and we continue to leverage the company's service levels as a differentiator in the market as a value proposition for both our mortgage customers as well as our mortgage loan officers. During the quarter, we achieved a record high pipeline level, which we attribute to the number of mortgage loan officers during the second quarter, as well as the quality of referrals this team receives due to their strong relationships with centers of influence in the real estate communities they each serve. While market rates fell during the second quarter, as illustrated by the 19 basis point reduction in the 10-year Treasury yield, which resulted in a pickup of refinance volume, purchase activity continues to be the majority of our pipeline. The reduction of interest rates negatively impacted the value of the company's mortgage servicing rights, which fell by $435,000. While we cannot project market pricing for the remainder of the year, we expect the pipeline to remain strong and level in the third quarter, and then anticipate a seasonal drop in the pipeline in the fourth quarter, as is typical. This will impact results we report for net gains from sale of loans. Service charge and fee income was positively impacted by incremental fees associated with the usage of legacy United ATMs and associated activities from Legacy United deposits. Furthermore, the company benefited from the addition of Legacy United bank-owned life insurance assets as well as the additional sales of loan-level hedges to commercial clients. The primary driver of the other loss in non-interest income is the aforementioned decline in the value of the mortgage servicing rights. Non-interest expenses totaled $46.1 million on a GAAP basis and $24.9 million on an operating basis, resulting in an operating NIE to average assets of 2.38% for the period, dropping from 2.84% in the linked quarter. On an operating basis, all non-interest expense categories were impacted by the merger. As Bill mentioned in his comments at the start of the call, The entire United team is focused on a successful data conversion scheduled for the fourth quarter. Once this is completed, management expects the cost savings discussed in our November announcement of the merger will begin to be reflected in our financial performance trends. This will be driven by identified redundancy relating to staff, branch closures, and costs we currently carry to operationally run two banks. Management remains committed to the 15% cost saves we announced in November. In our non-interest expense, we report amortization of the core deposit intangible. The core deposit intangible, which is included in the company's goodwill and other intangible assets on the balance sheet, totals $10.2 million at June 30th. The core deposit intangible will be amortized over 10 years using a sum of digits method. The effective tax rate for the second quarter on a GAAP basis was a negative 10%. The tax rate is impacted by core items such as bank loan life insurance, tax-exempt interest, and tax credits from which the company inherited from Legacy United, as well as one-time items related to the merger. Based on our projection, management is currently guiding to a 10% effective tax rate for the full year of 2014. Building on my comments regarding cost savings, timing, and expectations, I would like to provide an update on some other merger-related matters. In an 8-K disclosure last week, we indicated that our one-time expenses related to the merger, which we originally modeled at $34 million pre-tax, have increased to $39 million pre-tax. The major contributor to the increase was consultancy. Specifically, we hired a consultant that was able to leverage its proprietary database to provide the company significant savings in major contracts we have with our service providers. In return for those savings that add significant shareholder value, we share a portion of the savings with a consultant, which is captured in one-time expenses. We did not plan for this when we modeled one-time expenses in November. To date, between both legacy companies and on a consolidated basis, we have expensed $31 million pre-tax of one-time merger-related expenses. While nearly all of our balance sheet categories were impacted by the merger, I would like to specifically discuss loan deposit growth and the trends we're experiencing. As disclosed in our release, the company reported $73 million of organic loan growth, which represents 8% on an annualized basis, predominantly in C&I and residential loans. On balance sheet, residential loan growth is due to the mix shift from fixed rate to adjustable rate mortgages, which in large part occurred in late 2013 due to a pipeline shift into purchase mortgages, as well as expansion into markets that generally favor adjustable rate mortgages over fixed rate mortgages. Management generally portfolios these loans while continuing to sell fixed rate loans with 15 and 30 year terms if the contribution margin on the loan represents a higher return than gains on loans sold in the secondary market. Commercial loan growth remains robust. Management takes a disciplined approach with pricing, using its risk-adjusted return on capital models as a guide. Sacrifices to appropriate underwriting standards will not be a strategy employed to increase or maintain growth. We expect our sales process and substantial market opportunities to provide for our future growth. We believe that our responsiveness and level of service is our value proposition in the market, which will in part mitigate the risk to our growth goals due to aggressive pricing and structuring from our competitors. The company's strategy for deposit growth is twofold. First, by building and deepening our relationships with potential and current commercial clients, our bankers develop a better knowledge of the client's business needs and, when appropriate, can offer deposit and cash management products to enhance the overall relationship, thereby building a low-cost, stable funding source for the company. Second, in our retail channel, we train our branch management and teams to build and maintain relationships with the communities they each serve. This level of access to our sales managers is a big part of our value proposition to our current and potential customers and is an attribute of our customer service strategy. Similar to our commercial bankers, our retail channel success of building these relationships will result in low-cost core deposit growth. We are seeing an increase in competitive pricing and marketing in our footprint designed to take advantage of the merger. We have provided tools to our retail channel as a mitigant to any disintermediation that may result from irrational pricing in the market. We have stepped up our marketing and communication to our customers, and in certain locations we are utilizing direct mail and cross-selling strategies to build and maintain deposits. As we accomplish our short-term goals of a successful data conversion and introduce redesigned products, management remains confident that we will have a value proposition that is compelling to our existing and prospective customers. We are mindful that equity market performance, as well as higher confidence in the economy, has started to impact deposit growth across the industry, and with that trend, the pricing of deposits has become more competitive. We have seen this trend in our markets as well. Management will continue to emphasize the building and deepening of relationships with our existing and potential clients in response to shifting market dynamics for deposits. We reported tangible book value per share at June 30th of $9.99. Included in the $1.53 decline from the $11.52 we reported at March 31, 2014, is the effect of the increased issuance of capital to Legacy United shareholders and the increase of intangibles from the merger. While the June 30th, 2014 tangible book value reflects the after-tax of one-time merger items expense to date, if the remaining pre-tax $8 million of one-time merger expenses yet to be realized were included in our second quarter results, this would have resulted in an additional reduction of 10 cents per share. This does not consider any other changes to capital as well as net income in the second half of the year. The pro forma tangible book value of $9.89 per share would result in an additional 15 cents of dilution from what we originally modeled in November. The additional 15 cents of dilution is driven by the aforementioned increase in the one-time merger expenses and the difference from the anticipated mark-to-market adjustments in November and the final mark-to-market adjustments reflected in our June 30, 2014 results. Despite the modest increase in dilution, this does not significantly increase the payback period, and management remains confident with the assumptions communicated when the merger was announced. The executive management team has begun the strategic planning process for 2015 and 2016. We will continue to develop and execute on action plans that will achieve our stated goals, as well as balancing investment for future growth. The team continually looks for avenues to improve organic growth and seeks strategies for new or expanded fee income opportunities. The company uses comprehensive analytical methods to model the payback periods for these strategies and understands where we can add shareholder value. First and foremost, the team is focused on the fourth quarter data conversion and maintaining our high level of customer service and satisfaction. Thank you for your time this morning, and now the management team and I would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. If at any time your question has been addressed and you would like to withdraw your question, please press star, then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. And our first question comes from Mark Fitzgibbon of Sandler O'Neill and Partners. Please go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Hey, Mark.
First, I was curious with respect to operating expenses, if you could sort of help us think about operating expenses in the third and fourth quarter, and also if you could just sort of clarify the timing of the systems conversion. Is that early in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter?
Okay, Eric? On the timing of the conversion, it would be earlier in the fourth quarter, although, probably some of the cost savings opportunities would really come in kind of later in the fourth quarter. So you're not going to see a full quarter's trend in the fourth quarter for some of the savings. It's really probably going to be more reflective in the first quarter of 15. In terms of the kind of operating expenses, core operating expenses in the third and fourth quarter of this year, I think the level of 238 is probably a NIE, operating NIE to average assets is probably a good indicator of what you'll see for the remainder of this year.
Okay. And then secondly, I know you said the loan pipeline was at record levels. How big is that, and what does the complexion look like?
Brandon, why don't you discuss sort of the residential?
Sure. On the resi side, so, you know, as we mentioned, it's still largely purchase, even with a bit of an uptick in refi. You know, we're still in that 60 to 70% purchase range that we've seen for the last few months. So, you know, that hasn't changed. And the mix from a fixed to ARM, you know, again, driven largely by the market, you know, depending on whether that refi boom kicks in. I will tell you that it is the largest that we have seen, you know, from an historical perspective at the bank.
Yeah, Mark, it's Bill. We've just taken a lot of share in the mortgage business, and so I think that's why we've had probably better than expected results there. It's just much higher volumes due to our commission mortgage loan officers, the numbers of them that we've had, and taking share. Dave, you want to sort of comment on the commercial pipeline?
Sure. Similar to Brandon, the pipeline in all of our commercial practice areas remains strong and growing. Certainly, despite market conditions, to include the excess liquidity that's out there in the market, the pricing pressures, and various underwriting constraints that our competitors seem to be throwing at the wall against us, we are finding our opportunities. Our pipeline is looking really good. Our production is solid, as you're aware. So we're very confident that it's going to be able to meet our objectives for the balance of the year, and we expect the solid growth going forward that you evidenced in the first portion of the year.
And then also, Eric, perhaps you could help us think about the margin, both the core margin, trend as we move forward, as well as sort of the impact of the accretable yield and, sort of the timing or recognition of that.
Yeah, so the second quarter effect is probably a little more magnified, but by a couple reasons. First off being that the average balance is only reflected for 2 months. So if you kind of do a comparison of the average balance sheet and the period end balance sheet, you're going to see a pretty big difference there. So I think if you were kind of to take a look at the effect of the accretion, the net accretion on the loans, particularly in the second quarter, and then what we're projecting for the third quarter, you're probably going to see about 50 to 60% of the level of impact in the third quarter versus the second quarter. And in terms of the purchased assets, when we do a prepaid adjusted analysis of the loans, our average is around 60 months. We're probably going to have, impacts on the NIM for, some time, although the weight of that impact will kind of fall off because we're going to be originating more, and then so the proportion of purchased assets that are affecting the NIM will fall over time. In terms of the other marks, the loan mark was the more volatile, because we had applied a credit and a interest mark, on the portfolio as of 4/30. However, between 5/1 or 4/30 and 6/30, if a loan either was renewed, extended, or paid off, in terms of the interest mark, it wouldn't be that great because the interest mark's looking at the remaining life, but that credit mark, fully comes in. So the effect in the second quarter was largely driven by the accretion of credit marks. Accretable credit marks, not non-accretable credit marks. So that's why you kind of saw a huge impact in that second quarter.
Okay, so I guess if we look at sort of the third quarter margin with the adjustments in there, are we sort of in that maybe 340-ish range? Is that a good guesstimate, do you think? I know there's a lot of moving parts, but.
Yeah, I think, we reported a 336 as the operating kind of what you're calling as core. And I think that, that's probably directionally correct for the third quarter. As though the purchased loans, kind of roll over, get renewed, or we originate at a current market rates, all else being equal, I would expect that 336 would kind of fall in line to what Legacy Rockville reported in March. Now, I'm not giving any credit to any changes in the market and what's happening to the yield curve in that statement, but kind of trying to really isolate how the core NIM would trend, it would trend towards what Rockville had in the first quarter.
Okay. And then the last question, it does help a lot, thank you. And the last question I had was, You guys have about 1.5 million shares eligible to be repurchased under your current authorization. How are you thinking about repurchases at this level?
Hey, Mark, obviously we look at that, every day, real time, and, we like to take advantage of it. That said, I don't think you'll see us doing the level of repurchases that we did, a year or two ago.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
And our next question comes from Travis Lan of KBW. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Just to circle back on the expense conversation, Eric, is it correct to assume that really no meaningful cost saves are achieved prior to the data conversion?
Yes.
Okay. And then at what point, if we look out into 2015, at what point do you think you see cost saves fully phased in on a quarterly basis?
I think that if you look into the second half of 15, when we that's when you're really going to see a true run rate of NIE, which goes back to our original comments on expense saves in November, where we were expecting to realize 50% in year one and 100% in year two. So, there's going to be some additional saves, probably not to the degree that you will fall into the run rate in the fourth quarter of 14, but we're going to see some additional saves in the first half of 15. So I would look to the third and fourth quarter of 15 for, a true run rate.
Okay, that's helpful. And then could you guys just remind us of the post-close performance goals that you outlined with the deal, and then your expected timing, I assume, based on those comments, would be kind of the back half of 15, but just maybe update us on that a little bit.
Yeah, in terms of the operating expenses, we targeted one of the ratios that we look at is NIE to average assets. So we're targeting 1.9% there. So I think that's one of the things that, we're very focused on and will achieve in the back half of 15.
Okay. Then can you just talk a little bit about the size of the purchase deteriorated loan in the quarter, and I assume that came from UBNK. It was no other single loan purchase, right?
Yeah, Mark Kusha, you want to take that? Mark's our chief credit officer.
Sure. The provision expense, greater than half of that, related to two loans. One which was Legacy Rockville, which has been on the radar screen for a long time. It's been substandard. It's a loan about $2.6 million. The other is a purchase loan, C&I credit, where they had an adverse impact to their revenues, and the company is struggling. So that relationship is approximately $4 million.
All right, that's helpful. And then
I would just add to that, we deem the reserve to be adequate, asset quality remains strong, and our expectations are that will continue.
Okay, that's helpful. And then, Eric, if you could just give a little bit more color on the tax rate and how you expect that to trend. I know you said you expect 10% effective tax rate for the year. Does that assume kind of where you would be with the additional merger charges? Just maybe a little bit more color on the tax rate would be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, there's some obviously some complexities with taxes with the merger, and a portion of the merger expenses, aren't deductible. I would expect that, on an operating basis, we'll normalize. Kind of settle around that 35%. But then when you take the full year in perspective, based on what's happened with the merger, that's where you get to that 10% on kind of a GAAP basis.
Got it. Thank you very much.
And as a reminder, if you have a question, please press star, then one. Our next question comes from Matthew Breese of Stern AG. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey, Matt.
Good morning.
I wanted to go back to the margin for just a second, specifically the purchase accounting for value marks. I know the average earning asset piece is a little bit diluted because of the timing of the deal, but The $4.9 million specifically, how will that look next quarter? Is that going to be somewhat similar next quarter and going forward as the lifetime marks play out?
When it comes down to the loan side, Matt, that's the one I would focus on because that's where the volatility is. So the effect on the on the interest expense, that's not going to be as volatile. But with loans, the benefit that we received in the second quarter is not the level that we're expecting to see in the third quarter. So if you take that effect and almost half it, I mean, I would say 50 to 60% of what we experienced for the net benefit on net or on interest income is what we're expecting in the third quarter. Now, that's not taking into account any type of large prepayments on any type of loans or whatnot. So because we're using a level yield in terms of the realization of these marks, so obviously if there's more principal that comes in than expected, that would change.
So specifically it'd be the loan mark, which is $3.4 million, and you want to say cut that in half. Is that correct?
Directionally, yes. That's what we're expecting. Okay. I would say 50 to 60%, Matt.
So that $4.9 million next quarter would look more like $1.7 to $2 million. Is that accurate?
You're probably a little light, but I would directionally put you more towards the $2
million. Okay. And the actual core margin, excluding all of the purchase accounting marks, you're saying is going to head closer to the 315 you reported first quarter. Over what period of time do you think?
All else being equal, yes. Now, I mean, that doesn't give any doesn't consider what's changing with the yield curve. I mean, if you know, it's the yield curve from the beginning of the year has flattened out, particularly in the 5 to 7 year part of the curve. So, there could be some challenges there, but if we kind of just keep everything equal, as the purchased assets, particularly on the loan side, roll off and we originate at the new market yields, I would expect that 336 would kind of fall to our legacy rate.
Over what period of time?
Well, I mean, the adjusted prepay adjusted loan life for the total portfolio that we purchased from United is 60 months.
Okay, so over 5 years.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, and then, I know you guys have touched on the expense saves and headed to the 1.9 expenses to average assets. Could you just give us an idea of how expenses, on an absolute basis will shake out once the data conversion is all said and done?
You mean, Matt, like in terms of a dollar amount?
Exactly.
Well, if you kind of look at the NIE level with the two companies on an annualized basis when we combined and just kind of added them together, it was $120 million of NIE. And, we were talking about a 15% save. So, I mean, that kind of shakes you out around $100 to $105 million.
The other thing, Matt, is still, we continue to evaluate cost-saving opportunities on the combined enterprise. We literally work on that every week, every month. And then, also we will continue to look opportunistically at commercial team lift-outs and, mortgage lift-outs for financial advisors, the last two, of course, being commission-based. But we continue to feel very good about our ability to make this a highly efficient company and to make sure where we are investing operating expense dollars that we're getting a very strong return on those investments. And so, like I said, I think we still feel very good about, the guidance we provided back in November.
And related to the guidance back in November, could you touch on the profitability metric goals that you set out, specifically the 1% ROA and near 10% return on tangible common equity goal? Are those achievable as well by the back half of 15?
I mean, that is definitely what we're trending towards. You know, one of the challenges that has kind of presented itself since November is, you know, what the market rates have given us. You know, we rates have come in fairly significantly, and we have a flattening of the curve. So, you know, that could present some challenges in terms of earning asset growth and the contribution that earning asset growth brings to the bottom line. But, you know, we still remain committed towards that, approaching a 1% ROA and a 10% ROE number.
Yeah, that, I think what, you know, the big one I'm focused on is the 10% return on tangible common equity. Given what's happened with the 10-year and what we think is going to happen, what that's going to mean is we're going to have to grow earning assets a little stronger and probably cut a little deeper net basis because of where the 10-year is. And, you know, we see the opportunity to do that. Obviously, we have to get through our conversion first, and then Q1, Q2, Q3 next year, we continue to fine-tune and make progress on all those. And I think, you know, the real answer is going to be, you know, what do you see in Q3, Q4 run rates 2015 for our company?
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
And this concludes our question and answer session. I would now like to turn the conference back over to management for any closing remarks.
Look, I just want to thank everybody for your continued interest in our company, and I hope you guys have a great summer. Take care.
The conference has now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect your lines.